We are Rogue Media Sports.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and I'm in studio, Far North Dallas, Frito Nation Productions. Ed has just arrived back to the warmth, but he's just right in the shadows of Lambeau, where he spent since 8 this morning. So he's in the aftermath of having talked to Mike McCarthy and Dak and everybody involved. But Ed, I just wanted to start out with, it was good to see. I saw you, in fact, I think I was in church looking at some of your social media, which I probably shouldn't have been doing, but it looked like McCarthy, as you were trying to record McCarthy or watch him, you know, making his way back and the cool video tribute they made to him, and I'll let you address that. But that was a kind of a neat video. I think you were just trying to kind of capture him arriving, and he made a beeline to shake your hand. And so you kind of captured footage of him coming at you for the handshake. I think you finally put your camera down as you visited with him. But what was the pregame scene like? And obviously he's not in a good mood now, but it seemed like Mike was pretty excited and humbled, or whatever the words might be, to be back on a place that meant so much to him.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Mike coming back to Lambeau Field for the first time since the last time he coached a game here was in 2018. He got fired before he went home. The last time he was in the stadium had been a few days after that, when he had an emotional farewell that he was granted to say goodbye to his players, who gave him a standing ovation before his remarks and after he delivered them. Mike was good enough this week. You know, he had planned to just talk about his return to Green Bay, limiting those questions to his press conference Monday. And then later Monday, he did a conference call with Green Bay media, and he intended for that to be the end of it. With the exception of the Fox production group that he's obligated to speak with before the game. But on Wednesday, he agreed to meet with me. I prevailed upon him to acknowledge that as much as he didn't want the game to be about him and not about his players and his team, that he was going to be the focal point. And I could not do my job well on Sunday morning from Lambeau Field using material that he had given to everybody else in the free world on Monday, 6 days before. So he granted me 12 minutes with him at the Star after he did his press conference on Wednesday. He's great. I'd love to tell some of the stories. I thought it'd be easy to get into those if they had won the game, as I thought would happen. But in the NFL, unexpected outcomes are sort of the norm. But we were there at 8 o'clock this morning, and I had told my crew that he comes 6 hours before the game, with the equipment managers and some of the trainers. So keep an eye out for him. And sure enough, I had my back turned to the field, and I was about to do another live shot, another of many, for a digital show or something that we have. and as I got ready to do this live, my photographer producer said, "Hey, there, I think McCarthy's on the field." And I turned around, and sure enough, I saw him in the camel haired coat, overcoat. And so I just put everything down and walked away from the show, knowing I could get back to him in 15 minutes or so. And I went out to talk to McCarthy. I really didn't know if he talked to me. Wasn't prearranged. He was out there with Bucky Buchanan, the equipment manager of the team. He was looking at the turf. He was looking up at the wind, trying to figure out what the conditions were going to be like. It was a fairly nice day. It was in the low 20s at the time. And I did not. So I went out to take his picture and maybe get a little video for our show and for my social media. And lo and behold, he just starts walking toward me as I'm videoing him. And, you know, I said, "Hey, I was just trying to shoot some video." He says, "I just was coming over to shake your hand." So I stopped recording at a certain point, shook his hand. I asked him about Ezekiel Elliott's status. He essentially told me he didn't expect Elliott to play in the game, that he needed another week, and they had three games in 12 days. And so it seemed like Tony Pollard was going to be the starting running back again. So that was nice. He told me he had not been. I said, "Have you acclimated yourself to the visitors' locker room?" And he said, I have not been in the visitor's locker room here. I was telling the guys, he said, I haven't been in here since 2000 when I came here as an assistant coach with the New Orleans Saints. So it was a great opportunity to talk to Mike under those circumstances. As I said, he was very generous with his time earlier in the week as well. I'm deeply appreciative. It's unfortunate for him. The result wasn't better. In fact, as we get ready to play the music and we'll talk about this game in detail on the other side, it was, in fact, a historic faceplant for the Cowboys in Mike McCarthy's return to Lambeau Field. And I'll explain that statement on the other side of whatever you're about to do next.
All right, Friedel, keep that faceplant maybe our headline. That kind of sounds like a good one. I'm glad Ed's gone with that. And with that, I will say, Friedel, please play the music. All right, it is Doomsday Podcast. Ed live from Green Bay, where he has been there on the frozen tundra and spent some chilly minutes late in the game. He was down on the field, and it's always kind of fun. I've spent a lot of moments at the end of those games, especially when there's a big ending and some excitement. It's kind of fun to be down there. And, of course, Ed was all layered up and prepared for it, having grown up and spent so much time in Colorado. Ed is not any stranger to cold weather, like a lot of us Texans. I struggled mightily, and that's why Ed, whatever that game was, the 2007 NFC title game, where we both
33
were
33 below zero.
I was not trying to get on the field. I was in the safety of the locker rooms and press box the entire time. And the only time I was out in the elements was like about a 50-yard walk. And fortunately, I was with Peter King, and his parking's better than most of ours. So that was good. Okay, Ed, you called it a face plant, and I'm ready. You can start putting this thing in perspective, but that's pretty bad. I mean, you know, first of all, to have a 28-14 lead, and you're watching that thing. It's into the third quarter. They've got the ball first and fourth quarter, and so many games this season. You know, this is when the Cowboys put a team away, and in a sense, they let one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and a team that has struggled mightily, and boy, they had that one wide receiver dropping passes all season, dropped a couple of passes early in the game. He ends up being a huge hero. But Christian Watson from, I believe, Tennessee Tech, we discovered. North Dakota State, sorry. Okay.
He is the first receiver to score three touchdowns receiving in a game against the Cowboys since Randy Moss on Thanksgiving Day in 1998, a game we all remember. But so to my point about this being a historic faceplant, Mike McCarthy's return to Lambeau Field results in an unprecedented loss for Dallas. And you alluded to it. The Cowboys failed to protect a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter for the first time in franchise history. They had been, get this, 195-0 in those situations, including regular season and playoff games. And I thought, you know, usually when a team's down two touchdowns, and especially if you have Aaron Rodgers, you know, you're going to have a pass rush, you're going to close them out. And the Cowboys, Dan Quinn, has the best pass rush in football. But the Packers head coach, Matt LaFleur, and the aforementioned Aaron Rodgers really remained committed to the running game. You know, they viewed the Cowboys pass rush, because I talked to LaFleur last night, they viewed the Cowboys pass rush as an element that could dominate the game if they allowed it to. And they were reminded of that when DeMarcus Lawrence stripped Zach Rodgers early in the game. So despite trailing 28-14, listen to this, the Packers ran by design on 62% of their plays, the highest rate ever in an Aaron Rodgers start. Rodgers played five quarters through only 20 passes. Now, three went for touchdowns. So I think the Packers felt like, we can run the football on this defense. We can take their pass rush out of play. And we will, by doing so, create some opportunities for big plays in the passing game. And that's exactly what they did. And in the Cowboys locker room, Micah Parsons, you know, he clearly recognized what allowing more than 200 yards rushing in consecutive games means for Dallas. He said, this is a fire that this defense has to put out. If we don't do that, no opponent is going to let us play the way we want to play. They're not going to let us rush the passer if we can't stop the run. And Malik Hooker ominously pointed out, as I was about to leave the locker room and asked him about that, future Cowboys opponent starting Sunday against the Vikings in Minnesota, Dalvin Cook, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor, all on the list of upcoming opponents for this Cowboys defense that better learn to stop the run.
Yeah, might want to mix in, you know, stopping deep passing plays as well. But the running was, it was a dispiriting performance for the Cowboys and did not get the job done. Before we go any further, Ed, I did want to mention our presenting sponsor, Marable Homes. Family-owned custom home builder, building timeless classic homes in the Dallas area. A great team equipped to handle luxury residential new construction, and I'm seeing so much of it. And they've got such an incredible group that they use, and like all the people, Ed, all the, you know, like with the cabinets and everything that you need, like electricians, like they're all there ready to go, and they're all part of the Marable Homes family. So it's not like, okay, well, we got like 17 different groups we got to be. No, Marable, because of these beautiful custom homes, has everybody ready to go on your behalf, and they want their clients to walk into the new homes and have that, quote, it feels good to be home feeling. Ed, it's Marable Homes, it's Marable, homes.com. On Instagram, Ed, where you and I may be forced to go with all this Twitter madness, at Marable Homes, and then on Twitter, also at Marable Homes. All right. Ed, have you been spending any more time on Instagram? Has anybody been impersonating you?
Not that I know of. I haven't gotten any angry calls from any of my bosses asking me what the hell it was I just tweeted and why was it so erroneous and egregious. So I assume nobody has yet impersonated me, but thanks for bringing it up as a possibility that somebody out there now might endeavor to do exactly that. Because somebody did steal my handle while I was laid off. When I got back on Twitter, I had to come up with a new account name. So I did lose my identity once before. But hey, in talking about the game, I mentioned that just incredible stat of 195-0 the Cowboys were in their history when they had a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. And the Packers, by the way, were 2-29 with Aaron Rodgers when trailing by 14 points in the fourth quarter. Both wins were in 2018 against the Bears and the Jets. So those circumstances, Aaron Rodgers almost always loses, and the Packers have every previous time won the game. And so that is really got to bother the Cowboys under these circumstances in particular, because, you know, there really was a sense within the team that they wanted to win this game for Mike McCarthy. They wanted to give him the game ball in Green Bay, and there was no game ball to give. And Mike McCarthy was clearly agitated after the game. He didn't say that this loss concerns him in the standpoint of now the Cowboys are 6-3 and they could be 3 games and a tiebreaker behind the Eagles. If the undefeated Eagles beat Washington tomorrow night on Monday Night Football, the Cowboys are going to be 3-plus games down with not a lot of time to run them down, even though they play them on Christmas Eve in Dallas. McCarthy didn't seem to put a lot into that, but it certainly seems like all of a sudden the likelihood is that the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs. They're going to do it, you know, not as a division champion, and that means they would likely have to play on the road in the opening round, which increases the possibility of another early exit, which Mike McCarthy can ill afford.
Yeah, and boy, the Giants continue to win. They win to advance to 7-2, and the Cowboys now with the 3 losses, and we'll see as they get ready for the Vikings. Doesn't get any easier, and the Vikings do have kind of a blueprint that's been put before them, and as Micah said, they got to put out this fire. Mike McCarthy said after the game, Ed, you were there, he put heavy emphasis on, and I think this was in regards to the officiating, very, 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 and he kind of on that third very, he got pretty aggressive with it, put kind of the Pittsburgh emphasis on it, very, very, very frustrated. Now, I think that goes with on that third and four call before they went for it on fourth down in overtime. Thought there was an obvious interference there. And I bet they were upset, too. They had one long, nice run that was negated by a holding penalty that was maybe somewhat questionable. I don't know. I mean, I think you could call holding a lot of times. It was probably a hold. On Connor McGovern. And then they had the one play where their rookie wide receiver apparently looked over and, you know, made sure with the official, hey, I'm, you know, checked.
Thomas, Jalen.
Correct.
Jalen Tolbert, you're talking about, called for lining up in the neutral zone. McCarthy said, you know, it's almost part of your taking your stance that you check with that official. And he said the official against Sarah Thomas actually motioned for Tolbert to move closer to the line of scrimmage than he was. And then threw a flag on him. So I don't know if that's true. I didn't witness that, but that's what McCarthy said. I don't think he was as agitated about the officiating as he was just the penalties. And the fact that they led the NFL in penalties last year, he's made it a point of emphasis his entire offseason. And they go into this game and they have 9 penalties for, you know, 183 yards. And a lot of them are very, you know, costly, in very costly situations, as most penalties are. I think the biggest, Dak Prescott did not play an exceptional game by any means. He had the two early interceptions, the Packers converted into touchdowns both times. He was not very good on third and fourth downs. In fact, I'll read you a stat that, will put that into some kind of perspective, that he went 4 for 12 for 49 yards. That's 4.5 yards per attempt with 2 interceptions on third and fourth down in this game against the Packers. He's now completed, get this, an NFL low 43.3% of his passes on third and fourth down with 1 touchdown and 3 interceptions. No quarterback has posted a completion percentage that low on those downs since Tim Tebow in 2011. He was 42.5%. So Dak's getting into a very dangerous area here, and it's hard to sustain drives when you're not effective in those situations.
Have you tweeted this out, Ed? That one you just
said,
Tebow.
I saved it for the podcast.
Yeah, I like that. No, I was going to give you a retweet if that was out there, but let's use that as a big tease when we're getting ready to get the podcast out there. That is a good one, a Tim Tebow. Boy, never great to be mentioned, even though, Ed, you covered Tebow, and I think liked Tim, but obviously accuracy was not his, you know, his big strength. I would say that I agree it was a very uneven performance by Dak Prescott, not great that in those key moments that he wasn't accurate, and also not great. I mean, I think a lot of times, and even on the broadcast, Ed, they were pretty quick to sort of blame the receivers for not running the proper routes, and it looked like Dak and others were getting on to Dalton Schultz and CD after that. But listen, as I think Stretch is going to talk about too, if you're late and in the middle of the field, you're going to get picked off sometimes. And to throw that both those interceptions were bad, but the one when they were down there about to go in, and then even the one where and both of them were by 20, number 20 for them, that he's not even a starter, he's like a special teams type player who's been pressed into duty. He makes two big plays, but Ed, we talk about the 28-14, but the reason it was even just 28-14 is because, I mean, the Cowboys kind of kept the Packers in it throughout the game, and those interceptions played a big role in that.
Yeah, and you're talking about the safety, Rudy Ford, who had just, you know, one career interception entering the day. In fact, he'd only played 20 defensive snaps in the 5 previous games combined, and he becomes the first player with 2 interceptions in the same game against Dak Prescott since Earl Thomas of the Seahawks in week 3 of 2018. This is only the second time Prescott had thrown interceptions on back-to-back possessions in a game. He did it in 2017 against the Chargers. And, you know, hey, I tweeted this stat when he threw the second pick. The Cowboys are 3-10 when Dak Prescott throws multiple interceptions in a game. And in this particular game, the Packers were able to turn around and score you know, both times with touchdowns, and the, and you add in the points that they lost on the throw to Schultz, they were guaranteed three. And is it somewhat to do with, you know, the fact that this is only Dak's third game this season and only his first road game in week 10? He's playing his first road game because of that fractured thumb week one that required surgery and kept him out for 5 weeks. And so he hasn't had the same time on task, even with guys he knows well, like CeeDee Lamb and Dalton Schultz. I'm not trying to give him an excuse, but he said Schultz got knocked off his route. And then he said the CeeDee Lamb one was the same miscommunication they had had. I think he said in the Chicago game that nearly led to a turnover too. So they've got to be more effective throwing the ball than they have been. Does that mean, you know, they got to go out and go get Odell Beckham Jr. At almost any expense? That remains to be seen. But they just don't get a lot of explosive plays. And the passing game has not been particularly good. And with the exception of the Bears game, you know, they haven't scored a lot of points. They scored 28 today, 49 last week against a bad Bears team. But generally speaking, this team does not score like they did last year when they led the NFL. And part of that probably is they don't have three dominant receivers.
You know, I agree with that, and maybe they will address that, although one of the receivers actually had a great day today with 11 catches for 150 yards, CeeDee Lamb. Let's look at, Ed, and let's talk a bit, and then we'll hear from Stretch, but the fourth down, the decision to go for it on fourth down, which honestly I didn't have that big of a problem for, but the Frito and I were talking about it before you came on. I see teams that are doing more of this, and from an analytic standpoint, the willingness to be ready to go for it on fourth down, you have to kind of know what you're going to do. And that leads teams to, even like if it's third and eight and they know they're probably going to go for it on fourth down, they could still run the football. On third and four, of course, they wanted an interference call. Call didn't get made. So McCarthy's upset. Okay, they go for it on fourth and four. Don't have a problem with where they were on the field, because that was going to be a 53-yard field goal attempt. I think
they're
on
the 35.
Yeah, I think they could. I think they could have made it. I think they could have made that field goal, but again, that does not end the game. Okay, and then of course Aaron Rodgers would have a chance to come down and either tie it or win the game. So at that point, they're thinking about all of that. That's respect for Aaron Rodgers. It's maybe thinking about the fact that their defense has not been able to get the job done, especially in the fourth quarter. And so it's kind of like, let's go down here and end this right now. The problem I have, what kind of play was that? I mean, I know it got blown up and it ended up, you know, the pass rush came in. But if you watched all the routes, there's one leak out route. You know, he tried to throw it at the last minute to, I think it was Pollard out there. And the other routes... Right. The other routes, they're flying downfield. I mean, I'm like, who is the outlet? Like, where's the old Witten, you know, Y option or whatever it is? Where are all these routes or rub routes, whatever you want to call it, drags? There was that. It was almost kind of like Kellen was kind of almost surprised. Oh, okay, we're going to go for it here. I didn't love the play call there.
Wow. He shouldn't have been surprised, because McCarthy said in his press conference after the game that he had already decided after the second down play that they were going to go for it on fourth down if necessary. The second down play being what, second and 19, Dak threw short left to Dalton Schultz for 16, and they took a timeout. So it's third and three, shotgun again, incomplete, middle of the field to CeeDee Lamb, and then the play you're talking about on fourth and three from the Green Bay 35, showing the respect for, you know, Aaron Rodgers, and maybe not showing enough respect for their own defense that's won them so many games this year, but maybe not believing they could stop the run and the Packers were going to go down and score a touchdown. I think they have this – Mike knows the capabilities of Aaron Rodgers better than anybody in football, right? Mm-hmm. He certainly should. He coached him for every game he's played until this year, or until the last 3 years. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't get a chance to really see where everybody was on the field, because I was down on the field myself, but I think it was pretty clear. I'm sure he conveyed it to Kellen Moore that they were going to go for it. So nobody should have been surprised on fourth and three when they issued the field goal and went for the touchdown or to try to prolong the drive. And I don't think it was the wrong decision by any means either. You can argue they didn't have a good enough play call. Mm-hmm. They certainly didn't execute well enough the play they did call, because like you said, Prescott got fairly quick pressure and had almost no chance to get rid of the football. And yeah, you would think you'd have some quick breaking, quick opening route for him to go with on when you only need 3 yards, but that just wasn't the case at all. And they're in the shotgun and the entire series.
Yeah.
You know, and, once they cross midfield.
And, you know, back to your, we're talking about Dak perhaps, you know, saying, well, he's still trying to work his way back. Rodgers has not been good this season. He's playing through a thumb injury. You know, is it as severe as what Dak had? Doesn't appear to be, but he's having, you know, he's got these different tape jobs that he has. He got it banged up in the game. He kept playing through it. And by the way, Ed, he's not, you know, we talk about it, the Cowboys needing Odell Beckham Jr. You don't think Aaron Rodgers is like, get me a wide receiver too? And yet this guy that kind of infamously started the season by just flat out dropping what would have been like a 70-yard touchdown and had other drops and had 2 drops early in this game, just right to him. And Rodgers, you know, a lot of times Favre, I'm trying to think who was like, Brady was kind of like this. You know, if you started dropping passes on Tom Brady, I mean, it's like, screw you. I'm not coming back to you. You've lost my trust. Right. Rodgers doesn't really have any choice. Who else is he going to throw it to? Sammy Watkins? I mean, it's not like Lazard, you know, they're not great receivers.
Alan Lazard made a big play.
Yeah, made a big play at the end of the game. But I tell you what, he stayed with that kid, and he ends up with 3 touchdowns. And I thought that was interesting because he was looking like he was going to be the GOAT of the game in a bad way, and he ends up with 3 touchdowns and having a huge day.
He had 2 drops the first time Rodgers came to him in the game. And Rodgers, like you said, he stayed with them. He's, you know, a big, fast receiver. They don't have Davante Adams. They made that controversial decision. They don't have Randall Cobb, who's out injured. Christian Watson missed the game last week because he didn't have a concussion, but he was in the concussion protocol and unable to get out of it in time. So they didn't have him last week. But yeah, Rodgers has kind of been forced into this situation where these are the guys you have to win with. You know, he's a player that the head coach, Matt LaFleur, described as a guy who can run, you know, good inside routes and get vertical on you. And we saw them do that. Rodgers now has 7 touchdown passes to rookies this season, 3 to Watson today. And in 5 previous seasons, he had 3 total touchdown passes to rookies. So what he and Watson managed today has certainly not been what Rodgers has been known for throughout his career in terms of trusting and developing a rapport with rookie receivers who help him go out and win a game like this. The Cowboys obviously down some corners. They lost Anthony Brown early in this game to a concussion. You know, they've lost, what's his name?
Jordan Lewis.
The kid who's always around the ball. Another little guy started the season. I can't think of his name right now for some reason. No, this is embarrassing.
No, are you talking about the Cowboys?
Jordan Lewis.
That's what I just said.
Jordan Lewis, they lost. So, you know, they had Kelvin Joseph out there playing corner for really the first time. They had Deron Bland out there, and neither one of these guys was really able to stop Watson.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And on one of those big plays, Bland was chasing, Joseph was chasing on one of them, and you said you were watching Bucky Buchanan, who I love. He and Mike McCord and all those guys have been great friends over the years, but there was some slippage out there on that turf that that seemed to be occurring, and the Cowboys just having trouble in a lot of areas. And one of those, they lost Anthony Brown to a concussion, but he had already had some struggles in that game. All right, Ed, I fear that we could be getting some poor grades, not the two of us, but the Cowboys quarterback, and then I'm afraid the defense is going to get poor marks. It is now time for Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys scout and coach, getting ready to have his live TV show tonight on WFAA with Joe Trahan. But Stretch, let's start with the offense. I mean, you know, overall, it was a homecoming for Mike McCarthy. Cowboys, we believe, to have the better team, and they go in there. I mean, 28-14. I was just looking back at some of the plays, and it's just unbelievable that they had that kind of lead and were in that kind of position, and then they let Green Bay sneak out of there with a win. Now, the quarterback always is going to get maybe a lot of the blame and a lot of the credit, maybe too much either way. But two interceptions, this team has a hard time overcoming. Over the years, when he throws two or more interceptions, their record is like 3-11. All right, they don't overcome it. What was your overall thought on how Dak Prescott played in this game?
I mean, I felt like this was kind of, I really felt like this was his first game back after that injury. I mean, that's how I felt. I mean, I felt like a quarterback that had come off of an off week, who it felt like was rusty. I mean, again, accuracy with the football. And I know I'm going to grade him hard because of my point of reference. And sometimes that's not fair with, you know, being around and coaching Troy and seeing all that. But when you cannot make accurate swing throws, accurate slant throws, accurate option throws. And when I'm talking about accurate, I'm talking about putting the ball in his face mask every time. I don't give a shit if it's 38, 36, 35. I don't give a crap. If you're throwing a slant or you're throwing a swing and you can't, you're a pro quarterback and you can't stick the ball in the guy's face mask, that's a problem for me. So before I get to talking about the grand F for the quarterback, you can't throw the ball late in the middle of the field. I don't give a crap about what Olsen said about, oh, well, the tight end should have ran under Sam and over Mike, and that would have put CD in this position. Bull crap. Don't throw the ball in the middle of the field late when your team has every opportunity to put a decent football team away. You, to me, it's one of those situations where it just felt like his inability to drive the nose of the football. Does he make good throws? They call it a shake seven. We used to call it a kind of a sail route. Yes, he can throw that 20-yard ball. But to me, when you're a $40 million quarterback, you should stick 7, 8, 10-yard throws exactly where it should be every time. Don't tell me about the damn weather, cold, hot. I don't give a rip. I mean, the bottom line is this quarterback makes a ton of money, and to put on that kind of performance in that situation, to me, F. I don't need to go any farther. F. That's what he got.
An F for Dak Prescott. And given, this team, they say they just want to run the ball and have it be a run-based and lean on their defense, and yet Stretchy ends up with 46 pass attempts, or 47 pass attempts. I would say that is a recipe for, I mean, if you're going to draw up how to lose to a bad, struggling football team, they did it today. You go out and throw it 47 times, and you say you're this, but then you go behave like that. And we'll also have some time to discuss. I mean, you know, some even that fourth down call, that fourth and four call, Stretch in the overtime. I don't really have a huge problem with them going for it there, but let's maybe have some routes where there's some alternatives, where you can find somebody. I mean, even the setup to that. You know, if you think you may be going for it on fourth down, you see this at the college level a lot now. You know, there's a way you kind of set that up. You might run the ball on third and four. Instead, they threw it, then decide to go for it, and then the head coach ends up dunking his, spiking his headset. That, to me, was a weird-looking play call. Honestly, from a play caller, it did not look like he was ready for that call.
Well, to me, I mean, spike the headset. That's a little layover red ass from the non-flag that he felt like he should have got on third down with a PI. Was it a PI? Probably so. Are they going to call it at that point of the game? No. Be smart enough to know what you're talking about. I agree with you. I mean, set it up. I had no problem with him going for it on fourth down. They didn't have any real answers defensively as to how to stop Aaron Rodgers. I felt like they needed to put that ball in the end zone there. They put the game away. They were not able to do it. And because of that, they you know, let a team hang around and then you get beat in the NFL. You know, you look at the offensive line, I thought they played pretty well. I you know, the holding call, it's a holding call. When a back runs a draw and he runs up behind the guard and the hands are outside the framework, they're going to call holding. I mean, that's just how it is. But I thought overall, you got a decent day out of the offensive line. I thought you got a pretty decent day out of the tight ends. I thought you saw some good things from Hendershot. I mean, you can tell why they kept that young man. He's got a little crap in his neck, and you got to appreciate that. You know, receivers wise, that they're very inconsistent. They're really thin. I mean, Jalen Tolbert, the lineup offsides, to me, that is inexcusable. You know, it's to me, Gallup's looks about 80%. You know, Noah Brown's still a little ding. CD is a good receiver, but I tell you something, Matt. I mean, I'm going to get on them a little bit for trading Amari Cooper. I still don't like the trade. And to think about, you know, trading for Brandon Cooks at the time, and his salary was still $18 million. I mean, it's complimentary to what you had to Amari Cooper. Now, they didn't pull the deal, and they didn't want to waste that money. But I'll say this. I mean, if Odell Beckham is healthy, and that's a big if, because guess what? The Rams need a guy, too. I mean, they're in dire need of somebody, and they know him as good as anybody. But I would certainly, be looking to see what's going on from a health perspective with OBJ.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you got to take a peek, and the thought is he would be ready for the last month of the season, and in the playoffs would really be where that is. This is not immediate help, so you got to be able to kind of hang on. Pollard had another good day. It's just really, man, just the way what they weren't able to do with a 28-14 lead is really disappointing. Let's flip over, Stretch, and grade out this defense. I think to the immediate thing that catches your eye is they continue to be gashed in the run game. In fact, in this game, they gave up 207 yards. And then obviously with some of the injuries to the secondary, and some of this happened, by the way, before Anthony Brown was out with a concussion, so we can't blame it completely on that injury. But there were some real defensive deficiencies. And I don't think this was we spent so much time talking about the great Micah Parsons, and he is tremendous. But I think we do have to mention it when he doesn't play as well. And I don't think this is one of his better games.
Well, and then, quite frankly, they took away from the Cowboys what was their strength, which is their pass rush. I mean, they ran the football. They committed to running the football. Now, I mean, we can, if you want to, you know, to me, I ding Hooker a little bit. He had an opportunity to make some plays. He's been better on the perimeter tackling. I got a little frustrated with Wilson, that hit out of bounds. You know, they're aggressive guys, but they've got to tackle better on the perimeter. I mean, they've got to do a better job of shutting down, those outside zone runs. They had a well-designed play in Green Bay and running that little flip play outside. Dallas started shutting that down, made the adjustments. I think the adjustments will come with the run game. Do I like that they ran it for 200 yards? No. But I do think that what they showed was we're committed to running it, and you're not going to get us away from being committed to running it. And Dallas had them in position to do that up two touchdowns and then just didn't play complimentary football to put the game away. So, one of those longer runs was kind of on a bounce right there where Jones bounced it outside. I mean, that can happen to you. I think that they'll clean up that part of it. I still like that you got pass rush out of your front guys today. I thought they played well enough, and I thought the linebackers played well enough. But when you look at this secondary, from a tackling perspective, they've got to get better. The thing that bothered me most in the football game was, if you're going to play man coverage against a team like Green Bay, who's going to run switch routes, that means you're going to run switch responsibilities. That means they're going to rub you. That means they're going to pick you some. This is the first time that I've been openly critical of Dan Quinn and his scheme, and that is you got to get up, you got to get your hands on guys. And the fact that they didn't schematically do that, and they didn't have that opportunity to get up, play that press coverage, I get it, Brown went down, but you're just as good out there, or more physical with Joseph. Get your hands on guys, Bland. You got to be able to come up and press and get your hands on guys. So I'm going to, this is the first time I'm going to be openly critical of Dan Quinn, and I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to give him a D and give him an opportunity to maybe get some extra credit work in. But I did not like the scheme and what they were doing to stop Green Bay's pass game. That was the biggest thing to me. You got to get up, and these are inexperienced receivers. You should have been able to get your hands on these receivers. And it's something I'll show tonight on Channel 8. You've got to come up and play those switch routes, getting your hands on guys. Kicking game, I thought they did fine in the kicking game. I mean, everything pointed to Dallas being able to handle their business, except the quarterback did not function well. And really, again, we can sit here and point to one or two or three plays in the football game, but I'm not gonna say, well, throw my hands up in the air just because the team rushed for 200 yards against them.
It was interesting, some of those things you just said, because when it looked like the Packers were going to have to, and even the broadcaster said, hey, they're going to have to start throwing a football, they actually stuck with the run. And I think that was smart of them. And then they were somehow able to kind of work their way back in there. And, when they got it to 28-21, that team looked like, for all the world, like they were ready to get beat. And it just didn't happen. All right, Stretch. Well, listen, we'll be watching tonight on WFAA Channel 8. And tough loss for old McCarthy as he goes back up there to Green Bay. Just a really, really bad loss for the Cowboys. And I think they can recover, Stretch, but isn't it strange to think of the Cowboys as the third-place team in the NFC East now?
Well, and it is. It's a hard – that's the whole thing, is now you're three full games behind the Eagles. And, I mean, to think – I'm going to go back to saying this. To think about a quarterback who doesn't like the cold weather. I got news for you, brother. You're going to have to go play in the cold weather. That's how it's going to be, and you put yourself in that position.
Yeah, I think so. And they may want to think about how recently they did some stuff with the RPO game, and the fact that even tonight, when they really needed him to, Dak burrowed in there and got some tough yards on the run. And, I just, sometimes they just kind of forget about that. They had some of that cute stuff early in the game, you know what I'm talking about, where they had like a CD lineup in the Wildcat and had Dak floating one way and they went back the other way. I mean, there's some fun stuff in the arsenal, but when the game was on the line and they needed to drive it down there, they couldn't do it. They didn't get it done, and they end up taking the loss in Green Bay in overtime, 31-28. Stretch, we appreciate it, sir.
Bye, buddy. Have a good evening.
It is Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith, and always happy to talk to him. And a reminder about Marable Homes. My goodness, one of the great home builders, custom homes in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And whether it be Lake Highlands, Preston Hollow, you're starting to see them over in the Park Cities. They just do an incredible job. And it is Blake Marable is the owner of that. And Blake is really one of the top young entrepreneurs and home builders in the area. And again, we appreciate so much Marable Homes being a part of the Doomsday Podcast. In fact, our presenting sponsor. All right, it is good. Always good to hear from Stretch. Very fired up, and generally he doesn't. He's not that tough on the quarterback, but he was in that case. I did want to mention also Lakeside Roofing, another one of our sponsors, serving the DFW Metroplex with the highest quality roofing products, paired with the highest quality workmanship. Lakeside Roofing Company. It's lakesideroofco.com. And on Twitter, you can find them at @LakesideRoofTX. At @LakesideRoofTX. All right. Ed, this is let's look a little bit at the other side. I mean, we hit on it some, but I want to talk at a little bit more in depth, you know, some of the issues in the secondary. Stretch was just talking about it. Micah Parsons has said, "Boy, if they don't put this fire out, teams are going to keep doing this," and thinks everybody should be accountable to each other. Ed, that was Micah calling his teammates out after the game, basically suggesting that people need to do their jobs and stay in their gaps, and that there are some major issues with this defense. And the Pack, I mean, think about, Ed, I mean, the irony of Mike McCarthy going back, and you've made this point really well over the last few weeks and last couple of years, where, you know, obviously, when he had Aaron Rodgers, the passing game was always the most important thing to him. This was not some kind of running team, and they were never ranked very high in the, you know, as far as the statistics go for run. They ran for 207 yards, and now, Ed, that's the best thing about the Packers. They have this two-headed running attack and under Matt LaFleur, and I thought I found that very interesting based on what that team was under Mike McCarthy all those years.
Well, first I would say that I don't necessarily know that Micah Parsons was separating himself from the problem. Like, I think he knows he has a role in all of that too. And I can tell you that it seemed to me early in the game the Packers were making a determined effort to run at Micah Parsons. And that's, you know, that's not an unusual strategy. The best thing to do when you have an elite pass rusher. And let me tell you, Matt LaFleur told me last night what a freak he thinks this guy is. He thinks Micah Parsons is one of the greatest ever. Total freak show is what he called him. And so you're going to run it at a pass rusher. That's what you do. And they did it effectively. You can't be done effectively. That's the thing. Like, if the Cowboys, you earn your pass rushes on third down by playing the run on first and second down, and that's where they're failing. And I just think it was remarkable and a real show of discipline in this game that even down two touchdowns with Aaron Rodgers, the Packers would not turn this into a throw-a-thon and let Dan Quinn turn loose Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence and Fowler and all the rest of those guys. He refused to let them control the game, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. When I talked to LaFleur last night, and keep in mind, Mike McCarthy himself has said, if I was playing against Dan Quinn's defense, if I was playing against this Cowboys defense and I was calling the plays, I would run the football at them. And that's what's happening. Everybody is running the football at them. The Bears ran for 250 because they have a running quarterback who's elite. And we already talked about some of these upcoming opponents who have incredibly talented running backs and physical offensive lines. And you're going to have to earn your pass rushes by what you do on first and second down. They're not doing that. I asked LaFleur last night. I said, hey, you've got A.J. Dillon. You know, you've got Aaron Jones, who's a terrific back as a receiver and as a runner. He's had a lot of success against the Cowboys coming into the game, 5 touchdowns in 2 games. Do you think you have the personnel, you know, to run the football at this team? And one of the interesting things he said was, you know, the hard thing is when you have Aaron Rodgers is you want to make sure you give that guy enough chances to win the game with his talent, you know. But sometimes you have to do what's best for the game plan. And I think Rodgers bought into that. They were so desperate to win this game, having lost 5 straight. This would have been the first 6-game losing streak in Aaron Rodgers' career. And he has a lot of autonomy at the line of scrimmage to change runs into passes and passes into runs. And to his credit, he did what the right thing was for the Packers to win the game. And he, for the most part, when the opportunity was there to run, he went with it. He honored the call from the sideline and ran the football. And when he got a chance to throw, it was only 20 times, but he had a pretty fantastic day. What I'm going to look up his numbers right now, because
I've got them.
I think it's pretty remarkable. Yeah, he threw for 224 yards and three touchdowns. And Dak Prescott threw 46 passes for 265 yards. So he threw for 40 more yards and he had 26 more attempts.
Yeah.
Prescott threw 46 passes to get 265 yards and three touchdowns. Rodgers threw 20 times for 224 yards to get three touchdown passes. So Rodgers was the far more efficient player in the game, and the Cowboys could not stop the perimeter run game.
No, they couldn't. And to keep going on these stats, Aaron Rodgers finishes with a rating of 146.7, QBR of 82.3. And three touchdowns, no interceptions, did not make the back-breaking mistakes. And interestingly, Ed, the one angry sort of outburst that Rodgers had was with 30 seconds left when I think they called a pass. And he wanted to get the first down because they still had a timeout up there. This is right before overtime. 30 seconds left, and it was third and one, and they tried to throw it. And of course that didn't work out, and he had some choice words for LaFleur. Does LaFleur, Ed, when you're kind of having one of those one-on-one sessions with him, whether that be over the phone or in person, does LaFleur seem like the kind of cool customer who can, because he's a young guy. I mean, that's Aaron's older than LaFleur. That's got to be a difficult thing to try to manage a quarterback. He kind of toward the end of the McCarthy thing was taking down a much older man. Do you feel like LaFleur kind of has a good feel for rolling with the punches there with Rodgers?
Well, they've won 13 games 3 years in a row that Matt LaFleur has been the Packers head coach. So I think that Rodgers has some level of respect for him, and Rodgers ultimately chose to remain with the Packers and knowing LaFleur was going to be his coach for this fourth season. So I think Rodgers and he have a good relationship, but Rodgers, like most quarterbacks who are Hall of Fame players, and he's a four-time MVP and a Super Bowl winner, those guys are going to have some opinions and they're going to be willing to give them. And they're going to have a certain amount of control over what they do, and they should. I think Rodgers has earned that, but I do think that he has a reputation for being somewhat difficult from a personality standpoint. And that can be a challenge, I think, for coaches and teammates and so forth, but he's undeniably a great player. Mm. And, you know, he proved that again today. I think when you go into a game like this, it's always like, well, he's going to control the game at the line of scrimmage. I'm going to call a run play. Is he going to run a run play? I don't know. Sometimes he probably doesn't run a run play when you want him to stay with the call. There was a quarterback in Dallas who was kind of known for changing the play to pass plays on a whim. Tony Romo, he didn't win like Rodgers did. So Rodgers would give him a little more latitude than you give somebody else.
All right. Cowboys lose this one 31-28. And this is one, Ed, that right now, and things can change in a hurry in this league, but right now they seem far off the pace, and it does not seem like they're going to catch the Eagles, who continue to do their thing. They'll be playing tomorrow night, and we'll see if they continue down this road. I think they probably have a great chance of catching the Giants, but we shall see. To your point that you said earlier, it didn't seem like McCarthy was all that worried about, oh my gosh, what did this do to us in the division race? It was just losing this game. And I think the players probably do have a sense that they let him down. And the other thing that we haven't really hit on that much is it's a little bit, we used to do this thing when I was at ESPN with you. We'd look at all these records. Andy Reid, unbelievable off the bye. And I think McCarthy had been
20-3.
Yeah, I think McCarthy had been pretty good coming off the bye as well. But I think it's a little bit embarrassing to a coach when you have that whole bye, and then, of course, on top of that, you have a 28-14 lead and all that's attached to him going back in his homecoming, and you find a way to lose that game. I mean, this is a historical loss.
Historic loss.
Yeah.
I would just say that the whole bye thing is probably overrated, because there's really, like, people are like, well, why didn't they spend the bye working on their run defense? Well, you really are limited based on the NFL rules now as far as what you can do and how often you could, whether you can practice at all in any significant way, you know, during the bye week. You know, Andy Reid, I asked him last week, because I covered their game and they were coming off the bye, and I said, so what, you're 20-3 coming off the bye. Why have you been successful? What's your approach? He says, I've always gotten my guys out of the building for the whole week. And now the NFL does that for you. Like, the NFL basically has stolen the Andy Reid program. So the coaches don't get a chance really to make dramatic improvements. And that's why they spend all their time analyzing and, you know, self-scouting and trying to figure out where they can make improvements, but they're not doing it with the players on the field. That didn't happen until they came back to get ready for this game.
All right. And, you know, you were known for being close and having a great relationship with Brett Favre. You may be distancing from that right now. But I just wondered if Rodgers, I'm sure, in his younger days, probably picked up on that a little bit. Do you ever run into Aaron? Did you see him before the game? Does Aaron give you a little you know, hello or a wave? Or what's your relationship like with Rodgers?
Well, I think because of the situation with him being appointed, you know, drafted to replace Favre, and then sat there for 3 years while Favre, you know, started, retired, unretired. The fact that I was reporting mostly on Favre at a time that was difficult for Rodgers and pivotal in his career as to when he was going to get to take over, and when Favre was trying to force his way back, I was in Mississippi reporting on Favre. I think, understandably, Rodgers viewed me perhaps as somebody who was a Favre proponent and an adversary, therefore, of his. And that wasn't really true, but I could understand why perception from his point of view might be that way. I mean, when I was down reporting on Favre in Mississippi, you know, we had Wendy Nix and Rachel Nichols were staying in Green Bay reporting the Packers' point of view and the Rodgers' point of view.
Yeah.
So my responsibility wasn't to cover both sides fairly. I was just covering one of the two principals. I tried to do that fairly. What could you have said bad about Aaron Rodgers? He hadn't played. And when he did play, he was incredible. So I know I've never distanced him because of negative reporting on him to Favre's advantage. He just may have seen it like, oh, he's for Favre. He's always with Favre. He's always pontificating about what Favre says, and what Favre wants is what I want. So I understand that. But in recent years, you know, like when they came to Dallas for the Super Bowl, when I asked him a question, he referred to me by name. He referred to me by name a game I did last year. You know, tonight I actually went out and waited for him to finish his interview with Tom Rinaldi. And I said, hey, Aaron, I don't know at this point in my career how many more times I'm going to get to come to Lambeau Field. I love coming to Green Bay and covering games. And I just want you to know that it's a privilege to watch you play. And I've always felt that way. And we shook hands and that was it.
Oh, nice, Ed. That's nice. Yeah. I hope Brett doesn't hear you this.
Brett's very secure about his
I see. I could see you and Aaron trying some of that waka at some point. Golly, that stuff is very interesting to me. All right, Ed, tremendous work. Been a long day. Since 8 this morning, Ed has been at Lambeau, and he wraps up his evening, as he always does, with the Doomsday Podcast. And then we get this out there, and everybody goes crazy over it, and it's still recognized as the best Cowboys podcast in the marketplace, thanks to Lakeside Roofing, thanks to Marable Homes, thanks to Frito Nation Productions. Man, Frito does a great job editing and doing all this and producing our work. Ed, have a safe flight back. We'll be happy to get you back, and then you can go to your old stomping grounds where you used to hang out by that ship to Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I've already been assigned the game, and I don't have to worry about the dome collapsing, I don't think, like happened to me once before during the Favre years in Minnesota.
That's right. That's right. One of those years they played in that open air where the Gophers played. And that was a, I think they had to recruit people to go out there and you know, shovel all that snow and everything.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
That was, in fact, I think Frito may have attended that game. Frito, did you fly or take a train? Just trying to remember that story.
It's actually pretty good. I lied through my teeth to my wife at the time.
Uh-huh.
Because I just wanted to go to an outdoor game in the snow.
Yeah.
And I told her that ESPN was sending me to work the game.
Oh.
And which they weren't. And I borrowed Brian Broaddus' snowshoes, which were a size too small for me, Ed. And by the second quarter of the game, the outside of his snowshoes, the shell, had completely cracked open. And I just had two big styrofoam boots on. And it was freezing.
That's what you get for lying to your wife.
Yeah.
I got divorced.
Yeah, that's not the only thing.
Oh, you get that too.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It was amicable.
But I will be in Minnesota next week, and it's the same time frame, late afternoon kickoff, and a big challenge for the Cowboys defense with two great receivers, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson, and an elite runner in Dalvin Cook, as we mentioned. So big challenge for Dan Quinn and his defense.
All right. Do they still have that guy come out on the motorcycle before the game?
I think so.
They still do that. Okay. Used to be one of the loudest venues out there. Okay. Ed Werder, tremendous stuff for Ed and Mark Frito Friedman. I'm Matt Mosley. Good night from far north Dallas.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.